Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 31, Face to Face with Death.
Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. If you'd like to send us a message or some feedback, drop us a line at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com or have a look at all the things we've got available for you on our website at celticmythpodshow.com.
Including the show notes, which will tell you more about the story you're listening to, such as what our sources are, a map of the area the story takes place in, and a list of the character names so you can see how the strange-sounding names look written down.
So, have we got any news and views?
Well, yes. I thought I'd do some digging into that archaeological story you told us about in the last show.
Dear.
Can you remind us about the project?
Sure. We were talking about Flag Fen, which is one of the most important archaeological sites in Europe. In the Bronze Age, the Celts found this place where water and land mingled, called the Fen. And it surrounds an island of hard ground that was probably used for religious ceremonies. They found causeways, wooden roads leading to it, and a raised structure with votive offerings in the water around it.
Wow. One of those magical in-between places, then.
That's it.
Well, the bad news is that within 20 years, the whole site's going to be in danger of decaying as it's drying out. In the exhibition hall, some of the timbers are being preserved so that you can see them, with constant mist spraying and so on. But much is going to be lost.
Okay. And the good news?
Well, we spoke last time about a project to raise money and try and rescue as much of the area as possible. With the aid of Dig Ventures, a company that funds archaeological projects through crowdsourcing, and a charity that manages Flag Fen called Vivacity.
Oh, yes.
Since then, the funding window's been extended, so there's slightly more time to raise money.
Excellent.
When I last checked, they had 67% of everything they needed. They also had a chance to promote the cause on BBC Radio Cambridgeshire.
Really?
Mm. So let's have a listen to that clip, because Paul Stenton, who does the morning show, interviewed Sarah Stannage from Vivacity and Lisa Westcott Wilkins from Dig Ventures about the project.
11 minutes to 8. It's your Peter Barak for show Tuesday morning, the 24th of April. Staint and the team with you until 9. Now sit up, youngsters of Peterborough, sit up. Sit up. Sit up straight. You've now got a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take part in an archaeological dig, which is not easy for me to say, to be fair. Vivacity are teaming up with Dig Ventures for a project called Flag Fen Lives. It'll see youngsters work alongside people from Time Team and the British Museum at Flag Fen. Here to tell us more is Sarah Stannage. She's Head of Heritage for Vivacity. Morning.
Good morning, Paul.
It is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, isn't it?
It is, and thank you very much for that intro.
That's all right.
Fantastic.
I like to build local stuff up.
No, that's really good. I mean, Flag Fen is just an exciting and really amazing site, and it's something that we want to sort of raise the profile here in Peterborough. I don't know whether many people might not know the Bronze Age very well, so this is our mission this summer, really, to get people involved in the actual excavations. And we're doing this first time in a decade, so we're opening up trenches this summer.
Tell kids about the Bronze Age. Get them excited.
Oh, the Bronze Age. Well, what we've got on site, I mean, only 5% of the site's actually been excavated. So there's so many stories to unearth. There's so much we don't know. But we've got a walkway, a causeway at Flag Fen, which is quite absolutely sort of miraculous in its structure. And it's a place where warriors could have walked across. And it's a bit like sort of seeing the M25 equivalent from the Bronze Age.
See, that's the sort of stuff that's going to get kids interested. Warriors.
Absolutely.
Warriors could have walked across. He-Man. So, I mean, they'll get a chance to have a little dig, will they?
They will indeed, yeah. The main excavations for people over 17 in terms of being alongside some of the archaeologists, and we've got some of the best from the UK coming to dig this year. And for children, we'll be running a summer field school, so there's all sorts of activities. It's, even if people don't want to actually dig on site, there's going to be so much going on. It's going to be a very exciting summer.
Now, this is open to anybody, is it? Because you are offering bursaries, aren't you, to some university students?
Yeah, we are offering bursaries, particularly to local university students here in Peterborough who have got a great archaeology course. And we just want to get as many people involved as possible. And Dig Ventures are running a really spectacular project for us this year. And it's a unique one because it's the first crowd-funded archaeological excavation that's been run anywhere in Europe, as far as we're aware. So that's incredibly exciting in its own right.
Yeah, I'm slightly worried you're going to have too many kids running a rock, digging everything up.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why we've got the specialists, people like from the British Museum and the University of Birmingham. I mean, there'll be a lot of... I mean, it's a family day out in particular, but there'll be something there for everybody to do. But hopefully, we've got people coming in who are interested in from Australia and North America. So this is just a really great opportunity as well for local people to come along and see what it's all about here.
Well, Lisa Westcott-Wilkins is Managing Director of Dig Ventures, who you're doing this with. Morning.
Good morning.
How are you going to keep these kids under control?
Well, keeping the kids under control, I think, is going to be up to Sarah and the summer dig tent. But
there you go, Sarah.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lisa.
As archaeologists, we're used to inviting the public to come along and see what we do. And we're just excited to have the trenches open on site and have something new to tell people about this amazing site. And we're happy to have people come and peek over our shoulder and ask us as many questions as they want. I mean, that really is the point of all this.
At the risk of getting a rather obvious answer... what do Dig Ventures do?
Well, we're a company we've just launched this year. We're funding, in particular, this dig through crowdsourcing and crowdfunding. And that really just is an online platform through our website at digventures.com where people can come and join the project. So opportunities start from £10 up, and there are many different things and many different ways to participate through the crowdfunding. And what that really does is just open up our reach to the world. It's one of the most difficult things with projects like this is to make the opportunity available to people, and using crowdsourcing is helping us reach a much wider audience, as Sarah was saying, from around the world. But it's also really, really important and essential for us to let Peterborough know about the chance to come and take part in this dig in their local area.
Now, I may be 45, but I am a big kid at heart. So say I came along and I was digging and I found, I don't know, a hoard of treasure. Would it be mine?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I'm afraid. And in having a specialist on site from the British Museum, they're well aware of what to do with treasure.
So, I mean, the kids have got to give it up. So.
Yeah, they've got to give
I'm
it up,
so.
Unfortunately, although you'll get to have your name in the history books and I'm sure be on TV.
So schools can have a go at this. We've got kids from University Centre Peterborough. How do they all get involved in it, sir?
Well, you go to the Dig Ventures website and that sort of directs people through the various levels of participation that they want to engage with. So it's really simple, and yeah, I'm hoping so many people get involved. It's for 3 weeks this summer, so it should be a really exciting time.
Good stuff. Lisa, lovely to talk to you this morning.
Thank
you for coming on, and good luck with controlling those kids this summer.
See you this summer.
She's good, isn't she? She's so bright and bubbly. Lisa Westcott-Wilkins, Managing Director of Dig Ventures, and Sarah Stanage, Head of Heritage for Vivasta. Your chance to go and do some digging at Flag Fen this summer for 3 weeks, and who knows what you might find. You can't keep it, whatever you find, though.
This is Paul Stainton's Peterborough Breakfast Show on BBC Radio Cambridgeshire.
Well, it sounds like some good, solid work being done there, as well as giving folks a lot back for their involvement, both on the site and via the internet for those of us who can't get there.
Absolutely. Fascinating project. And let's hope they manage to raise the money they need.
Mm.
Now, I need to know something.
What's that?
Is it time for the story?
Yes, of course.
So remind us what happened last time.
Okay, here we go then. Pwych, Lord of Dyved, was awoken by a dream of a white stag in the vale of the River Kych. And he wakes the household up to set off for the hunt. When they eventually arrive at Glenkych, the hunt starts, and he finds his dog standing off as another strange pack pull a stag to the ground. He drives them off and sets his own dogs on the stag,
just as a stranger enters the clearing. Light of dawn, Quich watched the tall stranger approach him from the shadows, with something approaching dread. He was afraid of no man or beast. He'd stood in battle and seen men die, and was ready to face his own honor death and to cross to the other world when it was his time, in whatever way the gods chose. This feeling, however, was like being in total darkness, and walking into water far underground, not knowing if he was standing in a small pool or on the edge of a lake. The tall, mature man stopped in front of him and looked down at the Prince of Dovid. He was wearing an easy dark armor under his grey hunting garb. Around his neck was slung a long hunting horn from some unknown beast. And at his waist, Quick could see the handle of an exquisite sword. He looked up into the weathered face of the stranger, whose long, pale hair drifted in unseen winds like snow flurries. And the man spoke to him, saying,
"I know who you are, but I will not greet you."
Quick looked at him in some confusion. It was the custom for those of lower rank to greet him first, and he was the prince, in Dovid. But he didn't recognize this truly imposing figure. Perhaps he was of higher rank.
"Then I give you greeting, sir. You must be of a higher rank than I, and therefore not obliged to greet me."
"By the gods, it is not my rank that prevents me."
Then what else could it be, sir?"
"It is your own lack of manners, your discourtesy."
"I don't understand, sir. What discourtesy have I done you?"
"I have seen no greater discourtesy in any man than to drive away the pack that had brought down the stag and set your own pack upon it. That was your discourtesy. I will take no revenge upon you, but I swear before the gods that I will bring shame upon you to the value of 100 stags."
Quick stood there a second, in a frozen moment of time. He was both confused and wary of the stranger's threat. A loss of his honour to that degree could ruin his standing in the kingdom.
"Sir, if I have done wrong, I will redeem your friendship."
"And how will you redeem it?"
"According to your rank, but I do not know who you are."
"I am a crowned king in the land that I come from."
Quick now understood that as a prince, he was indeed of lower rank to this man. He moved closer to the stranger, inclined his head, and offered the proper greeting.
"Lord, the gods' blessings be upon you. I wish you a good day. May I ask which land you come from?"
"From Anun. I am Arawn, king of Anun."
We felt a cold chill in his stomach, long before his brain was forced to do some rapid thinking. Here he was, standing in front of the king of Anun, the land of the dead. In front of the Grey Lord, Death himself. He had to make amends before Death decided to make him join the half-seen host of writhing shadows behind him and gallop wildly through the worlds. And Quich was not ready to make new choices before the Cauldron of Rebirth.
"Lord," he said quickly, "tell me how I may win your friendship and redeem myself."
"Maybe there is a way. There is another king in Anun, Havgan the Summer White by name, and his lands border mine. He wars on me constantly and would claim my realm for his own. If you rid me of this oppression, and it is a task you can easily accomplish, you will do more than redeem yourself. You will indeed win my friendship."
"I will do that gladly for you," I fear combat with no man. But for me to fight this god, well, then you must have a plan. Tell me how I can do this thing.
This is hell. I will make such a bond with you that I can put my shape upon you. You will then be able to sit in my throne, in my great hall of Anun, and no chamberlain nor officer nor any other person who has ever served me shall know that you are not me. I will also give you the most beautiful woman you have ever seen to sleep with every night. All this from tomorrow until the end of the year, and then we shall meet again in this place.
Quick was stunned as the implications of Arround's plan sank into the pit of his stomach. To live richly as a king amongst gods for a year, and with the most beautiful woman he would ever have seen as companion in his bed. And then a thought struck him. Well and good, Lord. But even if I am there until the end of the year, how will I find this man of whom you speak?
A year from tonight, there is to be a meeting between him and me at the ford between our realms. Be there in my shape and in my stead. You must deal him just one mighty blow, and he will not survive it. And although he may ask you to give him another, you must not, however much he begs you.
Lord?
When last I fought him, I gave him my will by submitting to his request, and no matter how many more blows I gave him, the next day he was fighting against me as well as ever before. By not submitting to his pleadings, you'll win the battle on all levels. You must not submit and deal him another blow.
Well and good, Lord, I understand. But how shall I look after my own realm in this time?
Quick watched in amazement as Arround spoke. His outline seemed to blur, and the colours of his face and form shifted, until Quick, with a growing sense of being in the presence of something ancient and powerful beyond his understanding, recognized that he was looking at himself. In fact, he himself seemed taller, and his now white hair was flowing around his own face. He looked at his hands, and yet they were not his hands.
I as you, and you as me, in both our realms. A closer bond there cannot be. And so it shall be that no man or woman in your realm realizes that I am not you, and I will take your place.
Puig looked into the fathomless eyes of Arround and saw a faint smile cross Arround's, his own lips.
Gladly, Lord. Then I am ready to go on my way.
I will escort you through the worlds until you reach my realm. Your way will be smooth, and nothing shall hinder you.
The two of them mounted each other's steeds then, and Puig was startled by the rippling muscles of Arround's horse underneath his legs. This was a noble animal indeed. He glanced at Arround. Himself, mounting his own mare, expecting her to shy away from the touch of death's hand. She seemed as happy as if he himself were on her back. Arround watched Puig carefully, smiling at his obvious appreciation of the stallion's pedigree.
His name is Storm. When it is time to return to this place, give him his head, and he will bring you safely here.
Together, they turned toward the oldest and darkest trees, and walked carefully beneath their boughs, as the mists seemed to rise about their legs. The light of dawn seemed to fade into twilight shadows, and Puig glanced at the sky above him, the clouds seemingly racing past, and with no sign of the sun in its rising. The horses trudged on, and soon it appeared to Puig that all the colours around him seemed to have been leached from the world. All about him was grey. The mists rose high above their heads, and he could see barely 2 horse lengths ahead of himself. Strange shapes, half-formed and half-seen in the mist. Faces that refused to materialize and disappeared if you stared straight at them. Faces that mocked Puig or flew at him as if to scare him and then disappeared before they made contact. He held firm to his trust in the realm. In truth, he may have been more in the comfort of storm beneath him. And the mists parted as they rode. After what seemed like days of riding, the light eventually began to lift about them, until they rode out of the mists and the bark of the trees ahead began to reflect a silver light. Puig began to see the lush grasses of the land beyond, and as they rode across that pasture, the grass crisp beneath the hooves of their horses, Puig noticed that even the air around them had a clear, fresh quality and a brightness that took his breath away. And then he saw the settlement, except it was unlike any he had ever seen. He was used to structures of wooden lath, stone and mortar, and all no more than 3 times the height of a man. But these? There were buildings ahead of him that soared up into the heavens, whose roots must have gone deep into the earth to hold them so high. He turned to Aran, the unformed questions burning in his eyes. Aran told him then much of the history of the land and how it was built by the memories of those long gone and those yet to come. He told him of strange races that once used to walk the lands that Puig now called home. Of beasts that could fly, that could carry huge burdens and many men. And also of the fair folk, the Tulith Teig. Puig had heard much of the magic and trickeries of this race, but learned even more as he listened to the words of Aran. Aran told Puig much about the history of his land, and also about Puig's own ancestors who'd passed through these very hills. Knowledge and wisdom rolled over him like a warm, comforting blanket, and before he knew it, they were close enough to the walls of the settlement to see people stirring within. And Aran reined in and drew the mare's nose back towards the trees.
See ahead, my people go about their business, and all this realm now lies under your authority. Do you see the large building over there?
As I do, Lord.
That is your court. Make for it. And all there will recognize you. Watch how they behave, and especially observe those serving. And that way, you will readily come to know the customs of my court.
So Puig nudged the mighty flanks of Storm, and the stallion slowly walked along the wide thoroughfare ahead of him, knowing full well where he was going. There were roundhouses around Puig, and a few longhouses built of mighty timbers, hewn from the limbs of unknown trees. And then the houses became taller, as the number of people around him, dressed in all colours and in all styles of clothing, began to throng in front of him and all around. As their numbers grew, so did the noise of their talk and laughter. He seemed to be in the centre of a market and a feast, all at the same time. Each bowed their head to him as he passed, and doffed their cap, and inclined his head to each in turn, a growing sense of wonder beginning to fill his body. Then Storm began to pick up speed. No doubt his thoughts of fresh fodder spurred him on, and Puig saw the mighty walls of the tallest of all the buildings start to loom over him. The wonder became awe as his gaze turned upwards to follow the soaring arches and buttresses of the graceful towers, as they reached long fingers towards the clouds. This was true magic here, for surely the hand of man could have constructed no such edifice. They passed through the gates of ancient stone then, and Puig gazed at the frost-rimed walls before him. Each section bore a huge carved panel, depicting a scene from some battle of ages long ago. And much he wondered at the strange armour he saw, at the strange riding beasts, and the even stranger chariots that were fighting in those wars. It was only the persistent urgings of the mighty beast beneath him that Puig's eyes were pulled to the doorway in front of him, flanked as it was by 2 footmen wearing a grey and black livery. They both approached as Storm reined in before them, and one put a hand to Storm's bridle
as the other offered a stall for Pwyll to dismount. So Pwyll did indeed dismount and watched Stormwing led gladly away. A small cough in his shoulder reminded him that his footman was waiting for him, and he walked with the man to the door. Realising that to cross the threshold of these halls would mean that he was passing into realms that no living mortal had ever passed into, Pwyll breathed deeply and forced himself to calm down. He saw stewards coming to him, obviously used to aiding their lord, and with something approaching a dream-like state. Pwyll, Prince of Dyved, walked slowly into the halls of the dead. Next time, Pwyll learns much about the pleasures of the Otherworld and gets to meet the most beautiful woman he has ever seen.
Ooh, exciting stuff.
Getting good, isn't it?
Mm.
And a big thank you to Dave the Bard for playing the part of Araun in our show. Have we got any listener feedback?
Yes, we had a lovely message from our friend Sean of IRFT Celtic Music Radio a little while back. So do you remember it?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Thank you so much, Sean.
So let's play that.
Okay.
Celtic Music with a Twist. I just thought I'd try out your voicemail feature on Skype to see if I will install it myself. That was it. Hope you guys are doing really well. I saw that you had another round of the treatment there. Glad to see you're feeling a bit better. No matter what, you have to keep doing the shows. I'm loving them. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Sean. Well, all of the treatment has ended now, and I'm slowly building up more and more energy every day.
We're lucky to have such good news about Gary's health, and that we can start making shows again. So there's many, many more coming for you, Sean.
Yeah, although I don't know how you found the Skype thing. I'm having trouble with it. It doesn't seem to be recording people's messages. I'll have to have a fiddle, see if I can fix it.
Yes, that's the problem with using Skype. It can be temperamental, can't it? But please do, as I don't want to miss out on what our friends have got to say.
I will.
So unless you've got a promo...
I have.
Okay.
I thought it might be nice to hear our promo for Druidcast again, as when you're trying to find out about Druidry, ancient and modern, this podcast is an excellent place to start.
Okay, great idea. Let's have a listen.
Hello, my name is Dave the Bard, and I'm the host of Druidcast, the podcast of the Order of Bards, Ovates and Druids. Each month we present a wonderful selection of music, poetry and story, plus an interview or presentation by one of the leading teachers within the Western mystery traditions. In the past we've had Philip Cargon.
Mir Bashir, an Indian palmist, publishes a story called The Book of Shadows, which apparently Gardner got his idea for, rather than calling the book The Grimoire, he calls it The Book of Shadows and so on.
Professor Ronald Hutton.
Too often, the horned god of nature can be turned into a simple force of hoof and horn and grain and grunt and thrust and lurch and armpits and the men's locker room, rather than of the intellect, the tongue with words, the speeder of thought, the creator of beautiful, delicate things.
Ellen Evett Hopman.
Hello, Helen.
Hello, and I'm sitting here in my oak forest in western Massachusetts.
In your oak forest.
I live in an oak forest, I do.
Oh, you really do?
I really do.
Oh, okay.
Timothy Freak.
And the Gnostics, I think, are particularly clear with it, or they speak to me very clearly, which is, here we are in this perpetual, ever-changing moment where the appearances are constantly changing, but something is present the same, consciousness itself. We have fallen into the mirror of life and identified with the appearance rather than what is witnessing.
Fionn Tulach.
One of the best pieces of advice I was ever given by a traditional storyteller was, don't tell a story unless you believe in it with every fibre of your being.
Christopher Hughes.
But I've often sort of heard as well that, you know, and especially of late, that Druidry is a celebratory tradition, and that's it. End of, full stop. But I quite disagree wholeheartedly that it's not just a celebratory tradition. Not only is it a way of life, it's a tradition that not only empowers and transforms, but is steeped in magic, steeped in a quality that supersedes any human concept.
So if you're a modern druid, Wiccan, witch, Celtic, Christian, pagan, or just interested in nature spiritualities, tune in to Druidcast each month. You can find us on iTunes or on our website at www.druidry.org.
Thank you, Dave. Pop along and give his show a listen. He does have some absolutely fascinating interviews. And don't forget to check out the archives.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it. We really have come to an end.
In that case, we wish you many blessings and say, Hulbal.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a big thank you to Anne Roos, Master Harper, and Keltoria, with a K, Celtic New Age Music, who have both given the show unrestricted access to their music. And thanks again go to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used as some of the transitions you've heard in this show. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.